is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
It is the 31st of August. Can you believe that summer has gone that fast? Labor Day right around the corner here. College football. Man, it's time. That pleases me to no end. Michigan State kicks off Friday, 7 o'clock night game with Furman. Furman, it's going to be a warm-up. It's not a big school. It's in Greenville, South Carolina. A brother of mine went there for a year or two back in the day. Anyhow, Furman traveling to Michigan State, to East Lansing to take on the Spartans, 7 o'clock kick on Friday night, the Wolverines entertaining the Rainbow Warriors of Hawaii on Saturday in the Big House in Ann Arbor. I've got a big announcement regarding Ann Arbor coming up here in a few days. Pretty happy about some things going on in Ann Arbor concerning everything that we do here. But have you seen these previews for Sully? This movie with Tom Hanks? About the when the jet went down in the Hudson River. Not a crash, he says. It was a forced water landing. Anyhow, it's a Clint Eastwood film, and I find it a very compelling shot with IMAX cameras. It looks just terrific. Tom Hanks as well. Tom Hanks, I guess. And Clint Eastwood, maybe the best director today. You look at his body of work in the movies he has directed. And the kind of films and success he has had. You know, it just goes to show you conservatives can still win in Hollywood like Clint Eastwood, who has no use whatsoever for liberal politics. Anyhow, I want to go see this movie, Sully. It looks terrific, and I'm looking forward to seeing. I don't often say that about a movie, but it just looks terrific to me and has gotten my attention. The big news today, and it is big news, Donald Trump headed for Mexico today to meet with the president of that nation. President Nieto invited Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton to come meet with him in Mexico. Hillary Clinton too busy in the Hamptons and Hollywood collecting handouts from elitist donors to make the trip. But Donald Trump said, yeah, I will do that. And in fact, he's doing that. The talk for the last 3 or 4 days, the big talk has been the speech he's giving tonight in Arizona on immigration and where he stands on immigration. So today he makes the decision to go to Mexico and meet with the Mexican president. Very smart move for a variety of reasons. First of all, we have to have a good working relationship with Mexico. It's a large border that runs along Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, California. Long border, which has been in dispute for many, many years. It is the cornerstone of the Trump campaign, securing that border. Potentially evicting millions of illegal aliens in this country right now. Taking them back and running them out has been part of his conversation for a long time, a conversation that seems to be tempered now somewhat. But Donald Trump's idea is that there will be a wall, Mexico will build the wall, has been a cornerstone of his campaign from day one, from the middle of last year. And now, on the eve of his big immigration speech, he's meeting with the president of Mexico. Now, I say this because his Pew numbers in the Pew polling is, he's polling 24% of Hispanics right now said they would vote for Donald Trump, which is shocking. And you don't hear this reported on the left media, by the way. It's shocking that he's getting 24% to the left because that's better than John McCain did. That's better by far than Mitt Romney did. That's a 12% improvement over what Mitt Romney was doing. And by going to Mexico, that number will only get more robust. You see, Donald Trump has called the bluff of the left. This new battle for votes from Hispanic Americans and Black Americans and every other minority pleading for their voices to be heard in America. Donald Trump is hearing that. Now, the Democrats claim they are the party of the little guy, but it's a tough argument. When Hillary Clinton is in the Hamptons for lunch and raises $2.5 million, and there are exactly 10 people in attendance. The math, pretty simple. $250,000, $250,000 each to have lunch with Hillary. And you think those people don't want something in return? Donald Trump has decided to go where few Republicans have ventured. Well, through my entire lifetime, frankly. He's going to the inner cities. In addition to going to Mexico, he's going to the inner cities where the Democrats said, well, he's just talking about Black voters talking to white audiences. He'll never go talk to Black audiences. Really? Donald Trump laughed. I mean, think about this. Think about how absurd that is. In building skyscrapers, in renovating golf clubs, in developing real estate, Donald Trump has worked with every creed, every color, every race, every religion. I mean, in order to get these huge projects done, he's worked with everybody. Men, women, Republicans, Democrats, liberals, conservatives, legals, probably some illegals. My God, he's the first person, and he's gotten no credit for this, he has a woman, Kellyanne Conway, running his campaign. It's the first major campaign in American history to have a woman in charge. Ladies, all of this bunk about the war on women is garbage. Donald Trump put a woman in charge of his campaign, and it's working, and he's staying on message. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe Donald Trump didn't have enough respect for the men around him, and he thought he could talk over or talk through them. But Kellyanne Conway got his attention. Kellyanne Conway got him to focus his energy and read a teleprompter. Yeah, he's going right to the heart of the problem. Donald Trump's going right to the heart of the problem. He's going to the failing, democratically controlled inner cities of America, like Detroit this coming Saturday. Trump has been calling the failed policies of the big cities for what they are. The failures can be illustrated, illuminated, and laid out at the feet of a single party, because just one party has been in charge for the last many decades for all intents and purposes. Democrats have run all of the urban centers of America for decades, pretty much since I was born. Failures in Baltimore, Chicago, Cleveland, in addition to Detroit, among dozens of others, are all the end result of unrestrained socialist progressive policies that have gone exactly nowhere. So while Hillary Clinton is in the Hamptons or in Hollywood collecting millions and millions of dollars for her campaign and not talking to the press, basically in hiding, Donald Trump is talking to the press every single day. He's headed to Mexico before his big immigration speech. Then this weekend, he's coming to Detroit to talk directly to minority voters about the situation they're in, and has it improved over the last 4 years or 8 years or 12 years? And why the hell not give him a try is his pitch. What the hell do you have to lose is what he said. Seems like a pretty fair question. It's 14 after the hour here on this Wednesday. You're listening to the Steve Gruber Show. The hotline is open. Go ahead and give it a rip. 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. Back after this.
Genuine Michigan common sense on display every day.
18 after on this Wednesday. So I was cruising around the internet the other day, which I, well, frankly, do a lot of. And Ivy says I probably do too much of. But so it is. She does a fair amount of Pinterest cruising herself. So let's just keep that in mind. But at any rate, I find this picture of this Michigan farmer, Mark Santucci. He owns a farm up in Traverse City area. And here's thousands of pounds of tart cherries on the ground. And the caption was, these cherries are beautiful, but we have to dump 14% of our tart cherry crop on the ground to rot. Why? So we can allow the import of 200 million pounds of cherries from overseas. It makes no sense to me. So I decided, you know, I better get this guy on the air. Mark Santucci, our next guest here, owner of Santucci Farms in Traverse City. Mark, welcome aboard.
Thank you very much.
So, all right, explain this. You dumped how many pounds of cherries, first of all?
42,000 pounds.
21 tons.
Mm-hmm.
21 tons of 42,000. Why would you dump 42,000 pounds? And there's nothing wrong with them, correct?
No, they were probably some of the best we've ever grown.
Then why not just sell them?
I wasn't allowed to. If I was, trust me, I would have sold them.
And when you say you're not allowed to, you're saying the federal government would come in, fine you, seize your property, do whatever it is the federal government does, if you sold those 42,000 pounds of cherries.
Well, it probably wouldn't have gotten to that. What would have happened is the way we sell our cherries, the tart cherries are almost all processed because they're not like sweet cherries where you eat them fresh, and their lifespan off the tree is very short. So what happens is everything is controlled through the handler slash processor. So what they do is they control the processors. So the processors are told that X percent of the cherries either have to be taken off the market, in other words, put in some inventory for some unknown length of time, or put on the ground.
But why?
Because it's very complicated, but the long and short of it is they believe there's too many cherries that we've grown.
So it's a price control deal.
We have to get rid of some of them.
It's a price control measure from the United States government. How far back does this date?
Well, it started in 1937, but cherries were not always part of it. They were in the beginning, and then the farmers got rid of it, but the farmers and processors brought it back in 1995 when the price of cherries were very low back then, and they thought, and I underline that word thought, that this agreement would help them get a more favorable price from their perspective.
So for the 42,000, this is just baffling to me. This is the abject stupidity of government, you know, regulation not working the way, unintended consequences.
Absolutely.
Mark Santucci here, owner of Santucci Farms in Traverse City. All right, so 42,000 pounds of perfectly good tart cherries go on the ground. You take a picture. Does somebody from the government come by and go, yep, that's enough? Do they check it out, or what happens there?
They do check it out. It's not the government. The government has given the authority to a group called the Cherry Industry Administrative Board. So they check it out. And
Because that appalls me. I laugh because I'm appalled. What's the value, the dollar value of 42,000 pounds of cherries, roughly?
Roughly, it's about $12,000.
So $12,000. So you go out there, you spray your trees, you prune your trees, you fertilize your trees, you grow new trees, you do all these things. And then the government demands that you dump $12,000 on the ground because of a law from the 1930s that was reenacted 30 years ago or whatever, that doesn't work. And meanwhile, we're importing 200 million pounds of cherries from overseas. Is that also true?
That's true, and that's the key point here. You see, when this law was passed in 1937, and then when it was reinstituted in 1995, no one thought about imports because, no, we didn't import any tart cherries back in the 30s. And in the mid-90s, we were a net exporter of cherries. But the world has changed since then, but the law doesn't change. The law doesn't take into account these changes that have taken place. And I've been banging my head against the wall trying to get the Cherry Industry Administrative Board to realize that everything has changed, and we have to take into account these 200 million pounds of cherries that are coming in.
Hold on. The Cherry Administrative Board, Cherry Industry Administrative Board, are any of those folks actual cherry growers, or are they just government people?
Some of them are cherry growers, but many of them not only grow cherries, but they import cherries. So they're the ones, the very same people who are importing cherries for their companies
are forcing you to dump yours.
Determining what we can keep and what we need to put on the ground.
That I think that is the definition in Webster's for conflict of interest.
Yes, absolutely. And then to add insult to injury, two of the states that grow cherries, Pennsylvania and Oregon, have people on the board, but because their senators were smart, they don't have to follow any of the rules with respect to diverting cherries.
Now, wait a second. I thought Debbie Stabenow was the agriculture queen here from Michigan, the U.S. Senator from Michigan. Why can't she fix this?
Well, she wasn't in 1995, and trust me, I'm going to Washington in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to talk to her staff about the problems of this whole thing, and we'll see what she's able or not able to do at that point in time. So I'll give her a pass at this point in time.
No, but it's absurd. This is the way and because here's the thing. Your cherry crop on the ground rotting with fruit flies buzzing around is just one example of what's wrong with the government. Now, we've only got about 30 seconds left here, Mark, but apparently you're going to make some changes. If they don't make changes to help you, you're going to go a different direction. Is that right? I'll give you 30 seconds for the last word.
Correct. To the extent that I can, I'm going to move my business as much as possible to fresh and other methods that I won't be under the control of the Cherry Industry Administrative Board.
Unbelievable. Mark Santucci, you have a Facebook page, correct?
Yes.
What is it?
Santucci Farms.
Santucci Farms. That's Santucci, guys. If you want to go check it out, you can see the cherries that were dumped on the ground. It's absurd. Mark, thank you for sharing your story.
Well, thank you for inviting me on the show.
There you have it. Mark Santucci, everybody. That's what's wrong with your government. Dump 42,000 pounds, 21 tons of cherries on the ground for no reason.
Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
It's almost that time we need to talk about what your Halloween costume is going to be. We'll get back to that. I've had some people give me some ideas so far. Let's go to Frank and DeWitt on the hotline real quickly. Frank, get to it, and what's on your mind?
Well, good morning, Steve. Great show as always. I have a request for you, and what I'm requesting is will you go online and look in, we hear the allegations about Hillary Clinton's health.
Yep.
And I've gone on there, and folks, I don't see how they could have faked all of these. This woman, she's got one foot in the grave and one foot on the banana peel. here's what I'm asking, Steve.
All right.
Will you go on there? Because it gives credibility. If somebody like you comes on the air and says, yeah, I looked at this, and this really does. I mean, during the Benghazi
she's got some health issues. Frank, I'll look it up. I got to run, my friend. No, I'll look at it, and I do look at it. I think a lot of folks do because Donald Trump says he will release his medical records, no problem. And I'll tell you this. I've said this before. I think the medical records are more important. More important, you've got a woman who's going to be 69 when she takes office, a man who's going to be 70 if he gets elected when he takes office. Their health records are maybe more important than these tax returns. But the tax returns, all the Clinton campaign can talk about, it's a distraction. My next guest, Ed Brodo, an author, negotiation expert, political commentator, and much more. Ed, welcome to the program.
I do.
We're talking about all of these different things. But the anti-Trump media, which I've been talking about a little bit today, and I was talking a little bit about it earlier, talking about the references by Tim Kaine to Donald Trump being a man of Ku Klux Klan values, if you will, KKK values. And I'm thinking, I'm appalled. Donald Trump said one thing about Hillary Clinton being a bigot, and the media goes crazy. Did he go too far? Did he say too? It's just, it's ridiculous to me. And I worked for NBC News for many, many years. And looking at it now outside of that vacuum, it disgusts me. Am I going wrong somewhere, Ed?
No, you're absolutely right. It's disgraceful. They're lying about this. It's all absurd. But a lot of people believe it because a lot of people think that whatever they hear on the news is factual.
Now, here's the thing. Donald Trump today pulling a surprise and calling the left bluff on his way to Mexico today to meet with the Mexican president before his big immigration speech a little bit later this evening in Arizona. And then this weekend on his way directly into Detroit to speak to an all-black church. I think, Ed, he's got this thing dialed in.
Well, I think you may be right. It's hard to say, but I think he's got it dialed in on some very, very important issues, and that's what my book is about. The present administration is lying to us, and as a result, we are in danger. We're in danger in terms of our security because they're lying to us about terrorism. The president refuses to say Islamic terrorism. He refuses to acknowledge that it exists. The president also has us believing that we're in danger of what they call global warming, which I have a whole chapter in my book, and I prove that it's a hoax. The whole thing is a giant hoax. And yet the government would have us believe these things. And if we believe it, it could kill us economically. So all these lies that are coming out of Washington, which are being accepted and promulgated by the media, are putting us in grave danger.
Why do you think that the American public accepts them? I mean, no intellectually honest person would sit there and watch the coverage of Hillary Clinton, who hasn't been in front of the press corps in a serious way in going on a year, and watch the coverage of Donald Trump and say, well, it's equal, it's fair. Nobody would arrive at that conclusion.
Well, you wouldn't, and I wouldn't, but I think a lot of people out there would, because they don't want to confront situations. They don't want to confront the press. We have to confront the news. That's the point I'm making in Lies We Trust. You have to confront the news. And when you hear this nonsense being repeated about Donald Trump being a racist, for example, you have to say, wait a minute, I'm going to do my own due diligence. I'm going to do my own research, and I'm going to find out what the truth really is.
Well, the truth about that, Ed, I mean, and we're on with Ed Brodo here. The truth about that is, when you have no other narrative, when you have nothing else to turn to, when you have nothing else to discuss with the American people, scream racism. Scream racist. Yeah. You know, I listened to several different people, both on television and radio, who said they had known Trump for years and years, and they'd heard criticisms about him, this and that. They had never heard him called a racist until he ran for president. Never heard him referred to as a racist. And by the way, here's a guy who, for the first time in American history, put a woman in charge of his campaign. The first national campaign run by a woman, Kellyanne Conway. By the way, he has stayed on message. He stayed on what he's trying to get out there and getting his message out there with her in charge. First time ever in American history.
Well, what it does is it takes the focus off the real issues. It takes the focus off of Hillary's inadequacy as a candidate in terms of the issues.
Well, exactly. That's my point. She has nothing else to run on. What else is she going to run on?
Yeah, Bill O'Reilly said it clearly. He said the Democratic Party has nothing else to go on, so they use this racism thing as a tool.
So where do we go from here, then, if the American people are going to be misled, Ed? Where do we go from here? Because the media is doing everything. They're doing their level best to defend Hillary, to deflect criticism. But there's only so much. I mean, you've got 30 more emails that are coming out. You've got WikiLeaks. Julian Assange said he's got some, you know, really important things to share with the world. You've got the Clinton Foundation troubles. You've got a Judicial Watch that she now has to answer 25 questions under oath in writing. These are all problematic.
Yeah. Well, as I said, you see it and I see it. But the reason I sat down and wrote a book was because a lot of people don't see it. So I want people to read my book and find out what's really going on, what the government doesn't want you to know. It's all in my book, In Lies We Trust. And if people would just read my book before the election, I think they'd be able to make a much better, a more intelligent decision about who to vote for.
I think that it's important for people to educate themselves, no question. Ed, where can people find the book?
Amazon.com. Just look up In Lies We Trust.
In Lies We Trust. All right, Ed Brodo, thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure.
There you have it, Ed Brodo, author, negotiation expert. Also did some acting along the way. And there you have it. All right, so I'm getting excited about this weekend because, let's be honest, college football starts, and for me, that's an important deal. Plus, that means that one of the favorite times of year, because is there a better place in the world than Michigan in October? From September 15th, almost all the way to Halloween, that six-week period in Michigan, there is no better place in the world than where you live right now. When the leaves begin to change, and the hunting seasons come in, and the fishing in the fall, and the carving of pumpkins, the roadside stands. I love those, by the way, the roadside stands that have corn and tomatoes and everything right now, this time of year. Is there a better place anywhere in the world right now? Because I certainly don't think so. I mean, this is the place, this is it. And I wouldn't live anywhere else. All right. The hotline number, Common Sense Hotline number, 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. You can find out more at stevegruber.com. You can listen live there as well. By the way, this portion of the program brought to you by the Michigan 529 programs, helping you save for the future to educate your kids and grandkids. Buy tuition at today's prices or anything they may need. Books, pizza, whatever. Save with MI529.com. Save with MI529.com.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
All right, we're going to set it on its head now. Listen, here's what we do every day. You hear Bernie Sanders and Hillary, they all talking about a free education. We offer a free education Monday through Friday from 6 to 9 right here on the Steve Gruber Show. Tell your liberal friends, absolutely free. Bring a notepad and plenty of things to write with. Because you'll need to keep up with what we're talking about. Because today we're going to set the whole world on its ear. My next guest, John M. DeChico, is a U of M Energy Institute research professor. And apparently we have discovered that biofuels are worse for the environment, worse for climate change than gasoline, according to a big study. John, welcome to the program.
Great to be here, Steve.
All right, lay it out for me.
Sure. Well, a lot of people have always thought that biofuels were so-called carbon neutral, meaning...
Okay, you know what? Let's stop right there, because we need a little education.
Sure.
What is a biofuel?
Oh, sure, yes. Well, ethanol is the most popular biofuel, has been for many years. You know, some of us like to use it to fuel ourselves, but the corn farmers years ago got the idea, hey, we could sell more corn if we got the government to require that some of our corn get mashed and distilled into close to 100 proof to put in our cars.
Sure. Now, why do they call it biofuels? Because you can do the same thing with, like, switchgrass and corn and other biomass, correct?
Well, that's it. It's basically fuels from biology, right? You know, a lot of people say, well, hey, this is great, this is new, you know, but it's a form of nature's own fuel. I mean,
creating ethanol
didn't invent fermentation.
Right.
It happened in nature, and, you know, years ago...
a few thousand years ago, some schmuck was...
caveman learned to harness that and
exactly.
Make brew.
some schmuck was wandering through the woods and started, you know, sipping on the stuff that had gone sour, and next thing you know, he was, you know... back home watching football and having children. Anyhow, so tell me about how this study worked, because it says that biofuels, that being ethanol, that being corn, and all this biomass we're talking about, algae, not as good for the environment as we were once led to believe.
Well, that's right. And, you know, it depends. I mean, the PR around biofuels has thrown out lots of words that, you know, your listeners just heard. Corn, algae, switchgrass, and whatnot. It's important to sort of be real about what's going on here. Nobody's figured out how to make biofuels from switchgrass, okay? Nobody's figured out how to make biofuels from algae. What we're doing with biofuels is really just two things. One is industrial scale corn liquor production, better known as the ethanol that goes into a lot of our gas tanks.
Few oak barrels and we'd be in
and
business.
The other thing is we squish soybeans to make vegetable oil out of soybeans, and then you do a little bit of processing of that, and that turns into biodiesel. So these other things that people talk about that the government's been sponsoring research on for decades, like switchgrass, the hope was that we could make biofuels out of switchgrass or straw or leftover debris from cropland that, you know, was not harvested.
Any biomass.
Somehow turn that into fuel, and then it wouldn't compete with, it wouldn't detract from the grains and crops that we need for food. So that is, let's put it this way, I call those fantasy fuels. They've been highly subsidized from the government literally decades, since the 70s is when that started. And it's one of these things where you're saying, well, look, okay, maybe it's not such a good idea to take corn and divert it and turn that into fuel for our cars because that, you know, detracts from the food system. Maybe it's not such a good thing to take soybeans and turn it into fuel for our trucks. So we're going to make the fuel out of these other things. Just wait, and we're going to do that. Well, that's not what's happened. What's really happened is over the last decade, with a government mandate known as the Renewable Fuel Standard, we've taken what used to be a small fraction of our corn crop that was used to make ethanol and
right.
low-level blends, and more than tripled how much corn is going into fuel, so that nearly 40% of the country's corn harvest is going into fuel to power just 6% of the fuel we use in gasoline.
Right, but it hasn't, you know, I talk to farmers, I got farmers and my friends, we don't have an impact on the food cycle. We don't have an impact on food pricing. Cornflakes are still cheap. And,
well,
and high fructose corn syrup is in pretty much every damn thing you buy.
Well, you know, Steve, it's a little more subtle than that. You don't take 40% of your crop and use it for something without ultimately having an impact on prices. Now, that may be hard to see because commodity prices, corn prices, soybean prices, just like oil prices, are volatile. They go up and down depending on what's going on in the market. But I assure you, ethanol wouldn't have great support in the farming community, and it does, if it wasn't in their monetary interest.
Well, I think that we've got a lot of farmland in America.
Little bit of extra money that's hidden in the volatility of prices, it's wonderful for farmers. I don't dispute that. But that is a kind of a slick way of picking everybody else in the country's pocket.
Well, fair enough. But my point being is if you need 40% more corn, we've got a lot of extra real estate in America, a lot of dirt. And if we wanted to build ethanol plants, I just don't think that it's very efficient overall. It takes three units.
That's the bottom line. That, you know, that really brings it back to my study here, is that a lot of folks, and I don't pin this part on the corn farmers or anything like that, this really goes to the government and in particular the folks at what is known as Argonne National Laboratory in Illinois, part of the heart of the Corn Belt.
Real quick.
Have been saying that this ethanol is better for the environment, and that's what I take issue with.
And it's just not, according
it's
to what you found.
Not.
All right. Well, I greatly appreciate it. We should have you back to explore that a little bit more. We needed an education here. Greatly appreciate it, my friend.
You're quite welcome.
John M. DeChico, UM Energy Institute Research Professor. We'll have a few more thoughts right after this. You're listening to a Wednesday edition of The Steve Gruber Show. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I know you're excited about this. She survived her primary challenge yesterday and will run for her seat in Congress. It's going to be a tough run for her, though, I guarantee you that. Marco Rubio also won his primary challenge, and he will likely continue to be a senator in the state of Florida. So a big win there for the Republicans. The Koch brothers have pulled their money out of Ohio altogether. Why? Because they say incumbent Republican Senator Rob Portman is just fine. He's safe. His seat is safe and everything's just fine. Isn't that incredible? They thought that the Democrats thought Portman was vulnerable. Not so. And meanwhile, what about having a was Wiener exposed to classified information? Anthony Wiener, now three strikes, you're out. Sexting junkie, married, but soon not to be, to Huma Abedin. He's finally been thrown to the curb. Seems Huma can't take it anymore. Now the one-time member of a radical Islamist newspaper, Huma, said she is separating from Wiener. I mean, what's the big deal? So he shows himself around on his phone. Your boss's husband, Bill Clinton, has been doing a lot worse for a lot longer. But maybe your marriage wasn't just one of simple political advantage like the Clintons. Maybe it's just a little bit different with you, Huma. The big question that still hasn't been answered, however, did Wiener have special access to Huma and her classified dealings with Hillary Clinton and the State Department? Was Wiener given special access to classified material? Was Wiener exposed to things that he should not have been? I mean, besides on his mobile device? I don't know, but it's an important question. This is what I would say to Anthony and his wiener. Please, for the love of God, step away from the cell phone. Please, step away from the cell phone, Anthony. Nobody needs to see that kind of crap. I don't care what you're talking about. And next to your kid, really? You got the kid in the bed with you next to you? Come on. As my mother would have said to me, clean up your act. Clean up your act. All right, Donald Trump on his way to Mexico today to meet with the Mexican president. And then later, his big immigration speech will be held in Arizona, where he'll lay it out for everybody to be crystal clear about it. All right. Keep the faith, my friends. We'll talk tomorrow. I'm Steve Gruber.